This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house, we stay, is the refrain today for 2.5 million American kids raised by their grandparents. That includes more than 1,600 children in New Hampshire. These family arrangements are usually created in crisis mode. A parent suddenly dies or is incarcerated or disappears, often due to mental health or substance abuse issues. And then grandma or grandpa steps in, and it can be a tough ride, especially at first. In addition to the trauma that put the child's parents out of the picture, grandparents may face an array of complicated questions. Do they have enough room for a child or children? Do they have enough money? Do they have the energy it takes to raise kids a second time around? And what should their official relationship be, given that different rights and benefits are accorded to different arrangements, from guardianship to foster care to adoption? Today in The Exchange, Granite State Grand Families is our topic, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have a guest in studio this morning, Lorraine Bartlett, Director of the New Hampshire Division for Children, Youth, and Families. And Lorraine, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us by phone from D.C., Donna Butts, Executive Director of Generations United, a national advocacy group promoting support for intergenerational families. And Donna, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura. Great to be with you.
Well, both of you, but I'll turn to you first, Lorraine. What's a typical reason that a child would come to live with his or her grandparents? What are some of the stories that you hear?
Well, for the Division for Children, Youth, and Families, the stories that we're going to hear is a family becomes involved with us as a result of their son or daughter having allegations made against them regarding the safety of their children in their care. And as a result, if DCYF makes the determination that those children can't remain safely with their parents, we're going to look to a relative caregiver, oftentimes a grandfamily, a grandparent, to see whether or not they're in a position to be able to care for those children safely. We do a comprehensive assessment with the parents. We try and figure out with the parents if there's relatives available, grandfamilies included. Sometimes parents are willing to give us that information. Sometimes they're not. We certainly are seeing an increased number of relative caregivers in New Hampshire.
Are you? Yeah.
We are. About 20% of the children that are currently in out-of-home placement in New Hampshire in child protection are placed with relative caregivers, and oftentimes those are grandparents.
So abuse and neglect is often what you are seeing in terms of grandparents having to take over.
Yes, yes, and that could be related to their adult child being involved in illegal substances. They're not able to keep their children safe. Could be significant domestic violence situations. Could be a situation where an adult parent just is not able to provide for the care and supervision of their children. And we look to the least restrictive placement, which would be extended family that can keep those children safe.
Well, and Donna Butts, I read a lot of stories yesterday getting ready for the show, and I can't tell you how many times I heard, you know, my daughter or son just kind of disappeared. Haven't heard from them for months or weeks, and so I had to step in. What are you hearing in terms of how these families come together?
You're really right. It's usually a crisis that brings them together. Oftentimes it's a knock on the door in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden you go from being a two-person family to a four-person family. So oftentimes it's really sudden. But as Lorraine was saying, one of the things that I think we have been successful at in recent years is that when a child was in a crisis situation, oftentimes they would get removed from the home, and the first instinct wasn't to look for a family member. We've seen a real increase in that extra effort to make sure that they try to find families, which is much healthier for the children.
So that may be why, Donna, we're seeing a rise in grand families, is that the foster care system now places emphasis on relatives first. Is that what you're saying, Donna?
Much more so. There was always an emphasis on relatives, but recent legislation has really made it imperative for local authorities to try to locate a family member. So I think that effort has really paid off in terms of being able to find families.
You know, Donna, as you said, often these family arrangements happen suddenly. You said, you know, a knock on the door, a phone call in the middle of the night. Do a lot of grandparents enter this, Donna, thinking it's going to be temporary, that, you know, their son or daughter is just going through a tough time? I just wonder what some of the thoughts are initially and whether those thoughts turn out to be true.
You're really right. Unless they have the children because of the death of a parent, there's always that hope, that desire that the parent is going to be able to parent again, and that's a temporary situation. But in fact, more than 40% of grandparents raising grandchildren have had the children for more than 5 years. So they take them in thinking it's going to be a temporary situation, but it becomes very clear that they're going to be the permanent caregivers.
Wow. And in terms of, again, just giving us an idea, Lorraine, of what these families look like, how often is one or two parents still involved? Maybe even it's like a teen mom living with her mother and father. How often is the parent still under the roof?
Unfortunately, I really can't speak to that in terms of the numbers. What I can say is that there are times when grandparents will agree to take their children, adult children, into the home with them, with their grandchildren. We've certainly seen situations where, in order to assure the continued safety of the child, the grandparent, one or both grandparents, will agree to move in with their adult children. So there's a shared household. You know, I think that one of the things that we do see with grandparents who take their children in response to the question that Donna just answered is that we typically, first and foremost in the division, our goal is reunification with the adult children of the grandparents. So those grandparents need a lot of support around balancing the relationship between them and their adult child and supporting them in reunification, while at the same time keeping their grandchildren safe and needing to make those informed decisions about when is it appropriate for them to let their adult children have contact with their grandchildren, really managing that as part of the reunification plan that we have with parents. And then with the grandparents, having the conversation about concurrent planning. I can't speak to the number of years that grandparents care for their children here in New Hampshire because we have a pretty significant successful reunification rate. But certainly they do need to make those decisions as we move forward about if their adult children can't achieve reunification, are they in a position to be able to make that long-term commitment, particularly great grandparents, to the care of very young children for the rest of their lives? And what does that look like?
That's tough. I mean, not only sort of navigating when do I let go, but do I at age 70 or whatever have the energy, the resources that it takes to raise a little kid second time around?
Mm-hmm.
Or multiple kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lots of decision making, lots of conversations about what that looks like. If I'm able to do it, determining what the needs are. If I'm not able to do it, then what's that going to look like in terms of identifying another family or even a non-relative family for this child? And then how do I maintain my connections to that child in the future who may have lived with me for several years, but I can't continue to provide that care?
Wow. All right. Well, and coming up a couple minutes on The Exchange, we'll talk to a woman in Salem, New Hampshire, who has dealt with this issue personally. You can also join us with your own questions, comments, stories. We're talking about grandparents raising grandchildren today in The Exchange. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And here's a Facebook comment that came in before the show from Jessica. She says, my neighbors are great grandparents, raising an 8, 6, and 1-year-old. Mom is in and out of the picture, depending on drug and money needs. And grandma travels for a living, so that leaves the retired great-grandparents. They love them with all their heart, but you can just tell they don't have the energy to enforce rules. Jessica says there's no bedtime. Video games are played most of the day. In the summer, they send them to an array of camps. Jessica says, I know they are doing the best they can, and it is far better than the kids being with mom. It's just really a tough situation for everyone to be in. Jessica, thank you so much for that Facebook comment. And by the way, Lynn also said, don't forget great-grandparents. Your thoughts, Donna Butts, on just Jessica's description of, you know, these folks are doing the best they can, but, you know, they're tired. They're great-grandparents, for heaven's sake.
Oftentimes they are tired. I think one of the stories that I remember the most was a grandfather who was raising his grandson talking about how tough it was to try to help him learn how to ride a bike without the training wheels because he wasn't at an age where he could just run alongside and help him be steady. So that's why it's really important that we have supports in place to help the grandparents be successful in raising grandchildren, whether that's a support group, whether it's a local sorority or fraternity that's going to provide that big brother or big sister to help with the child, whether it's the neighbors, whether it's aunts, uncles, but that extended family. But it's putting into place the supports to help that family be successful. And one thing I think is really important also is that when we think about grandparents raising grandchildren, there are about almost 400,000 children who are being raised in the foster care system, and only about 27% of those are in relative care, a little over 100,000. There are another almost 2.5 million that are being raised informally outside of the foster care system. So what that means is that the grandparents are shouldering the burden of the emotional, financial aspects of raising a child, but they oftentimes aren't doing it with the kind of parental guidance, with the updated parenting skills, with somebody to talk to when they're having a problem with the child. They're oftentimes doing it without support. So we have to be really aware of that and make sure that there are supports in place for those grandparents that are raising children outside of the system informally.
Right. I mean, it's tough enough raising kids, you know, at any age, never mind as a grandparent or a great-grandparent. Jessica, thank you for the comment. Can you also, Lorraine, please just pick up on the point that Donna makes about, you know, a lot of grandparents are doing this kind of unofficially, mm-hmm. which is understandable. These things happen in crisis mode. On the other hand, they're not getting the support they need.
So one of the things that we've done in New Hampshire in recognition of that in terms of, you know, obviously, as Donna said, people need supports. They need resources. So there's a couple of things that I would say to anyone who's listening and that DCYF certainly makes available. We have online on our website a resource guide for New Hampshire families, for relatives. It's a relative resource guide. We also have the good fortune of having a relative care specialist who's available to take calls from families to help guide them through the system. And even if they're not involved with the system, find out where those resources and supports are in their communities.
Okay, a couple more questions for you on that after a short break, Lorraine. And we will take your questions and comments as well. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what happens when grandparents become primary caregivers for their grandchildren? 1-800-892-6477. We're looking at some of the challenges of parenting a second time around and what happens to make some of these different family arrangements come together. Join us if you have personal experience with this topic. We'd love to hear from you, your questions, comments, experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Lorraine Bartlett, Director of the New Hampshire Division for Children, Youth, and Families, and Donna Butts, Executive Director of Generations United, a national advocacy group promoting support for intergenerational families. One more time, that exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. So, Lorraine, just before the break, you were talking about how many grandparents are caring for their grandkids in a very unofficial way. They're not legal guardians. They're not foster parents. They haven't adopted the children. What are some of the problems with that or issues around that?
I would say probably one of the biggest challenges around being a grandparent, relative caregiver without a legal relationship with that child is when it becomes necessary to seek medical attention for that child, oftentimes getting them into school, getting resources for them, because you don't have the authority to sign. permission, authorizations. You might have something from a parent that says, I give my parent permission to take care of this. But in an emergency situation and you have to take the child to the hospital, they're going to question, do you have the authority to be signing for the care and treatment of this child? Could happen if that child's in need of some trauma, mental health care for whatever they've experienced. And so one of the things that we often encourage grandparents to do is consider whether or not they want to establish a legal relationship with their grandchildren, again, in those situations in particular where a parent has disappeared. You know, I agreed to take care of my son and daughter-in-law's children for a period of time. I haven't seen them for a month. I don't know. You know, Johnny needs to go to the doctor. The doctor's seen me a couple times, but I'm still questioning my ability to do that. Those would be situations if they call our central intake office, we're going to want to do an assessment around, one, the availability of the parent and where are they, but more importantly, what are the supports and resources those grandparents need and what can we connect them to? Do they need to be connected to the local family resource center? Do we want to connect them to our relative care specialists who can help them navigate some of the resources? Do they know that they can apply for financial resources here in New Hampshire through the Division of Client Services as a relative caregiver? They may not have that information, and we're certainly able and available to provide it to them.
So, Dawn, this question for you, but Lorraine, I want to hear from you too. What would hold a grandparent back from seeking that legal relationship, you know, at least as a temporary guardian, so that he or she could sign the paperwork at school or the doctor's office? What would hold somebody back, Donna?
There's a few reasons why they feel like they're held back. One is that hope that the child is going to show up any day to take the children back. The other is their fear of getting involved in any kind of a system or a legal relationship that the child might be taken away from them, that they could actually lose the child. Another is financial. Many of the grandparents don't have the means to be able to hire an attorney or deal with court fees, things like that. And I know grandparents who have lost their homes, who have mortgaged them, you know, gotten second mortgages, lost their homes because they've got into prolonged legal battles trying to be able to keep custody of their grandchildren. So the financial aspect can be really tough. And then, depending on the cultural or ethnic background of the grandparents, take for example in the Native American culture, the grandparent will always be the grandparent. The parent, whether they're alive or not alive, will always be the parent. You would never sever the relationship or change the relationship legally because, according to the culture, it is what it is.
It would be disrespectful or just not the way of the world.
Yeah, it would be disrespectful, and it would be asking them to go against their cultural values.
Wow. So do you advise people, Donna, to, you know, while being respectful of how they feel and the hopes that they may hold out that their adult child will be able to come back to a parenting role, do you advise people to seek some sort of official relationship so they can at least temporarily take care of the child?
It's always, I think it's always very helpful to have some sort of a relationship, which is one of the areas that we've worked very hard in helping states to establish is our guardianship relationships, because those are culturally respectful. And so if they can get a subsidized guardianship, which means that they get some financial support as well, that's an ideal situation because they do have that legal relationship, that legal guardianship of the child. But there still is that option or that opportunity in the future if the adult child is able to reunify and to parent the child.
All right, let's bring our listeners into this. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Jessica's in Littleton. Hi, Jessica, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, My question is what happens when the grandmother, I came from a situation where I lost my job, lost my apartment, I petitioned for my mother to take my daughter temporarily. It turned into a more permanent basis, and now that I've had a job, I go to school full-time, I have a counselor, I have a doctor, I have an apartment, I live by myself, and I'm going to terminate the guardianship. My mother is pulled away. So when I was down and out, she was there to help me, but now that I'm getting stronger and I'm able to resume my parenting, she's pulling away and she's alienating me. I haven't seen my daughter in 2 months. So I want to do whatever it is, whatever it takes to get my daughter back.
Wow. Okay, so she helped you out when you were going through a tough time, but now you're ready to have your daughter back and your mom doesn't want to let go.
Pulling away, yes.
Wow, tough situation. I know you can't, obviously, Lorraine, give people legal advice on the air, but just what do you think about this situation in general? Does it sound typical? How hard is it for that guardianship relationship to be terminated when the mom is ready to be a mom again?
Well, ultimately, the court is going to make the determination around rescinding the guardianship and returning the care and supervision and guardianship of the child back to their mom. And in this particular situation, you know, the grandparent or the mom of the adult child, it's really hard to trust the situation. You know, it sounds, Jessica, it sounds like you're doing a great job pulling yourself together. I would question if your mom truly believes that you're on the, you know, straight and up road, and she's probably also thinking about the, you know, the loss of her relationship with your child when, if and when your child's returned to her, what that's going to look like in terms of their relationship. So it oftentimes they will pull away. They'll feel like, wait a minute, this might be a betrayal to me. What's this going to look like in the future? I can't speak to what your relationship with your mom is, but to the extent that you might be able to engage her in some type of mediation or some type of counseling where the two of you can kind of work on your issues, that might be something that would be helpful. But I'm pretty confident she's probably pulling away because she's scared.
Well, and especially in cases, and this is not the case of our caller, but especially in cases where there's substance abuse, right? Mm-hmm. People say, hey, I'm all cleaned up. Yep. But as the grandparent, you're not really sure whether to believe them or not.
Right.
All right. Let's take another call. This is Susan in Manchester. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I have custody or guardianship of my granddaughter. She's 17 months old, and I've had guardianship since she was 2 months old. Both of her parents are addicts. They remain in active addiction and have minimal contact with her. My question is, when or does the court ever give an opportunity for me to adopt her and to take their parental rights away?
So you're ready for that, Susan, it sounds like.
You know, I am. I guess there's always hope that they could get their act together. But they kind of keep digging themselves deeper and deeper. And, you know, does this happen when she's 5? Does it happen when she's 10? What are the courts doing? Because I don't tell my story often, but when I do, everybody has a story very similar.
Wow. Okay.
And I never have got a clear answer on what the courts are doing or if they even know what they're doing.
Yeah. Susan, thank you so much for calling in. And two questions. Actually, Donna, to you first, we hear a lot in New Hampshire about opiate addiction. We're having a heroin crisis here in northern New England. How much are you hearing stories like this one from Susan that, you know, the parents are just, as she put it, in active addiction and can't take care of this little girl?
Well, you're really right that I don't think there's anybody who's done a definitive study about the causes or the reasons. Often the majority of grandparents are raising grandchildren because of some sort of substance abuse or addiction. There are other reasons, as we talked about, all the way from deportation to military deployment to poverty. Oftentimes, the root or one of the biggest issues is substance abuse. And sometimes where we see spikes is when we see spikes, whether it was with crack, whether it was with meth, whatever may be occurring. And so it has a really horrible effect on families. So it's wonderful when grandparents can step in, can provide that safety for the child, because it's always about the child, and it's never, ever the fault of the child. Now, with the courts, it does get difficult because, as Lorraine has talked about, family law in our country favors parents, and rightly so. So sometimes that makes it more difficult for a grandparent. But especially if there's some guidance and some advice and some support, if the situation is as it sounds, it seems like it would be really good to seek out some legal help.
Well, and here's a question for you. And again, Lorraine, you can't give a caller advice on the air, but you can certainly comment on just the courts and way they might view our caller Susan's desire to adopt this little girl. I have a friend who is a foster parent. She's fostered many kids. And at one point, she did want to adopt a child. Now, she's not a grandchild. And it was just almost impossible for her to reach that point. Is it easier for grandparents to say, I want to step in and adopt like our caller Susan does?
The challenge around the adoption process is, for example, with Susan, I don't know whether or not her situation is involved with DCYF when she talks about the courts. I mean, clearly when the Division for Children, Youth, and Families is involved, we're going down the a road towards reunification. Then we would look to permanency first and foremost. And if reunification can occur and a child is placed with a grandparent and it's determined that the grandparent is willing to adopt, we would move towards termination of parental rights, maybe even talking with parents about surrendering in order for the grandparent to adopt.
Yeah, because parental rights have to be terminated officially before. Yeah.
Yes. And so if I'm the challenge, I would think, and again, I'm not an attorney, is that I'm a grandparent. I've taken guardianship already of this child, this 17-month-old. I've had her. The parents are out of the picture. But technically, I'm the person responsible for the care and supervision of that person. So what can we hold the parents to in going forward in trying to determine that there's grounds for termination of parental rights? And then you're doing that as a private citizen, not with the – because you're not involved with the child placing agency. And as Donna said, that can be an expensive process for grandparents to be able to afford the legal fees that are involved in that and having an attorney file the petitions with the grounds for termination in order to free that child up for adoption. So there's – it can be complicated when you are not involved with the child welfare system.
Well, Susan, good luck, and thank you very much for calling in. Joining us now for the rest of the hour is Mary Ann McDonald. She's legal guardian for two grandsons, now age 20 and 27. Mary Ann lives in Salem. She's been actively involved in grandparenting issues. Mary Ann, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. If we could just hear a little bit of your story, Mary Ann. When did those grandsons come to live with you? How old were they?
Well, I got my grandson, Chris, when he was an infant. He was removed from the home when the mother made a 800 call to the child emergency line that they have available. And he was placed in foster care for the weekend until I could go to court on Monday when the first court hearing was, and he almost failed to survive. We almost lost him because he had an inner mouth cleft palate, and the foster parents just didn't take the 4 hours it took to feed this child, and literally took that long. So I've had Chris since he was an infant. He went home at 14 months, but I remained in his life every weekend and got him back permanently when he was 8 years old when they terminated parental rights. He was a mentally challenged young man, and parents didn't really want to have anything to do with him, so they wanted to get DCYF off their case, so they just signed him over. Matthew, on the other hand, was the brother, and he was 7 years. Chris was about 6 and a half, 7 when he was born. And she was determined that she was going to do the right thing with this child. It ended up that he went through the worst of the worst of abuse, and he spent 8 years in residential, of which we were part of the whole length of the way. And now he is with us permanently. He's been home since he entered high school. He's now graduated, and he has a job, and he's working, and he's doing very, very well. We never thought he would get to this point. That's sort of my story. My biggest issue I had, and I started working with the state of New Hampshire and Geraldo Pulaski's group, is they always wanted me to adopt, and I just wanted legal guardianship because I know there's more funding and help available to grandparent relative caregivers. If you know there's nobody else involved, that's the way to go. I just heard the story of the mom. I wish that she could get involved with the state because they could really help her out.
So you've chosen, Mary Ann, to be legal guardian, not adopt your two grandsons.
And only because I knew there was nobody else out there that would ever come after these kids and try to take them away. Once the rights of the parents are terminated, which they were with Matthew also, after 18 months of rigorous DCYF work. She wanted the children back. He never wanted to see his mother again because of the abuse he had suffered with her. And to this day, neither one of them has wanted to see their mother. So my situation may be a lot different than others. If someone has children that are really alcoholics, I see this, I hear this all the time in the programs I'm involved in. If they are alcoholics or they are drug abusers, it is very costly to go to court and terminate rights. We did this with my great granddaughter.
So that's
and the legal
yeah.
fees.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the legal fees involved in that for the lady that called prior to me coming on, they run about $30,000 in total.
So that's partly why, Marianne, you're saying that people, you know, people choose legal guardianship. It's just less expensive, less
right.
complicated.
Right. I mean, if you're involved with the state, they pick up those expenses. But if you're not involved with DCYF for some reason, if the child had been reported and the grandparent had taken the child like I had and became a part of the case, actually, as the person caring for the children, it makes a huge difference. And if you're all by yourself and your young adults have just handed the child over to you because of the drugs or the alcohol, it is very, very costly.
Mary, if I could ask you a quick question, and then we're going into a break, and then we'll talk a lot more. How old were you when these, 8-year-old and then 7-year-old came to live with you?
Well, I was working full-time at Compact H. It was actually Compact. It's now HP. I was about 42 when I took Christopher. I'm now 69. And I've got 2 young boys that I got to worry about.
Yeah. All right, Miriam, we'll talk more after a short break. A couple more questions for you and more questions from our listeners. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our monthly check-in with political junkie Ken Rudin. Send Ken an email before the show at exchange@nhpr.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about Granite State grandparents caring for their children's children. It's a rising trend, as we're hearing in the state and around the country. You can join us by calling 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have 3 guests for the hour. We've been talking with Marianne McDonald, legal guardian for 2 grandsons, now aged 20 and 27. She lives in Salem. Lorraine Bartlett is in studio, director of the New Hampshire Division for Children, Youth, and Families. And from D.C. is Donna Butts, executive director of Generations United, a national advocacy group promoting support for intergenerational families. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And Steve's joining us from Campton. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
I called. I'm raising a couple of grandchildren, 2 grandsons. I was listening to your program, and you talked about the cost involved of attaining guardianship. We ended up being appointed guardians through the family court, and there wasn't any significant cost involved. There was a family court system in New Hampshire, and they were very good. When the parents became unable to care for their children, I spoke to both parents, and we actually went to apply for temporary guardianship until the kids could get on their feet. The court system said that is not possible, so that's one thing that came out earlier in the show, that temporary guardianship is possible.
Steve, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
And you don't have to answer it, but I'm going to ask
sure,
anyway,
right.
Okay? Since you called in, and I'm really glad you did, you said something about until the kids get on their feet. Did you mean the parents?
The parents,
The younger adults in this situation. What's that been like for you to kind of, well, maybe hope that they'll get on their feet, come to the realization that maybe they won't get on their feet, and there you are, a full-time parent slash grandparent.
Well, when they actually had a hearing at Family Court where we appointed guardians, and we were told that we applied for temporary guardianship, and we were told that that is not possible. You are just appointed permanent guardians.
Mm.
So if that circumstance has changed, we can go back to the family court to have our guardianship rescinded. But I think the point is, I know I volunteered with CASA years ago, and the courts look and say, we don't want kids bouncing from one household to another. We want them to live in a household and feel like they have a permanent and secure situation.
Sure, they need stability. Yeah, go ahead,
Steve. So anyway, I just thought it was not expensive to go to court, and we didn't hire a lawyer for this or anything. We just went down, and people there were helpful.
Well, and how's it going? I mean, again, it takes a lot of energy to raise a kid, never mind at, I don't know, 60s.
It was easy when I was younger.
Yeah, I bet. Well.
But the kids still see their parents, and they're doing well. I'll tell you, they had someone from DCYF there at the hearing, and we do get a little financial support from the state. Part of my question when I went to court was, I just said I don't want to chase the parents for any financial support. And the fellow from DCYF said, don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. And they have helped get through the state.
Well, and that definitely helps. And I've heard that from people for sure. Getting the health care, the healthy kids coverage definitely is a help. Steve, it's great to hear from you. And, you know, Donna Butts, a question for you and maybe you too, Marianne. Donna, you first. You know, we're kind of laughing there, but it's true. It's tough being a parent as a grandparent. You don't have the energy levels that maybe you had at 20 or 30 or 40. What do you hear from the grandparents that you work with, Donna?
What I hear sometimes is that all they want is a little bit of respect and a little respite. I remember a grandmother once who, when a respite caregiver, somebody went over to give her a break from taking care of her grandchildren, and the person who was giving her a break thought that she'd want to go out, get her hair done, have an afternoon by herself. And as soon as the caregiver walked in, the grandmother laid on the floor and just said, "Thank God you're here."
Yeah.
She just
so
wanted
tired.
That break. So I think it gets back to the fact that grandparents are doing our country a phenomenal, phenomenally important role in helping to raise grandchildren. When we mentioned how many are raising children outside of the system, they're saving our country more than $4 billion a year. And we need to be there to be able to provide support groups, to be able to provide that extended community that they need in order to be successful, whether that's somebody that's going to come in and be the big brother, the big sister, and really look at the family, at the entire family, for that extended, the aunts, the uncles, the other members of the family or the neighborhood that can be there and help them be successful.
Marianne, what about you? How is it raising kids second time around? I mean, it's stressful no matter what your age, but what are some of the added stresses of doing it, you know, at a later age?
Yeah, well, the added stresses is as you get older, your mind is young, but your body says, I don't think so. You get very tired. My boys, now that they're older, are involved in many activities that I have to take them to. I think the stress of, they went through the system, so I do receive New Hampshire Healthy Families assistance. The new managed care has been a major headache. It has been a major, major headache for us. I'm actually paying for my private insurance to keep them on there. And even what they told me, I'm still stuck with a lot of bills here now. So the prior Medicaid program that Chris is on, and he's the older one, he still has opted out of the program.
Yeah, and Medicaid managed care is a huge issue, and we've definitely talked about that.
It is so difficult. And, you know, I feel bad for people that are fostering these kids because I hate to say it, but I don't see how they're not having the same expenses I'm having because I'm on the same level.
Well,
I mean, these kids are still guardians of the state that I have, and paperwork that you have to do.
I have heard that.
Update.
Yeah. And Marianne, I definitely want to ask Lorraine about that because I also know a grandma who lives with her grandson lives with her. She has no legal relationship whatsoever, Lorraine, because she doesn't want to deal with all the paperwork and the courts and the DCYF. And so there's this, you know, everybody this hour has talked about some of the benefits of having the state involved.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, Lorraine, there's this fear of just it's going to be overwhelming and it's easier just to bump along. What do you think, Lorraine?
Well,
hang on, Marianne. Well, yeah, I want to get Lorraine on this, too. Thanks.
I guess what I would say to that is I can appreciate that there are grandparents, you know, relative caregivers that feel like they don't want to become involved with the Division for Children, Youth, and Families. And, you know, there's a number of reasons for that. It could be that they don't want to disrupt their relationship with their adult children. It could be that they have concerns that the agency would come in and make a determination that maybe they're not, in fact, able to take care of their grandchildren. Clearly, we want to be able to provide the supports that we can in order for children to be safe in their own homes. And, you know, unfortunately, there is an application process for supports and services from the state. So, you know, I appreciate what Marianne's saying about some of the struggles that she's had with the managed care organizations and being able to opt out with one child but not with the other. And I think that those are growing pains when you move into a new system. And hopefully over time it will get easier. But, adult grandparents, I think, just need to make an informed decision about what they want to do relative to accessing supports and services or not. We can't compel or coerce them to do so, but we certainly will point them in the direction of getting those supports if they give us a call.
Well, and looking at the numbers, it seems like kids raised by their grandparents more often live in poverty. So that's an argument for connecting with some of those services. But I totally get the fear. I've talked to folks about this. Let's take another call. This is Cheryl in Concord. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. So I'm Cheryl Tedford from the Education and Training Partnership at Grattan State College. And I'm just calling to let people know that we have a relatively speaking training program. It's workbooks to help relative caregivers, grandparents, get some education and some training with all the issues that you talked about today.
Education and training in terms of either dealing with the courts or DCYF or the paperwork or just being tired and needing a break? Or
it's mostly to talk about what it's like to raise these children. So there's a workbook about the child. It's to talk about working with the children's parents and what that's like. And also there's a workbook that you work with that it's what it's like for me as the relative caregiver. What am I experiencing and what am I going through and what do I need for help?
What are some of the themes that keep coming up, Cheryl, with the people you work with at Grant State College in this program?
Well, a lot of the people that take these classes are grandparents or relative caregivers that are getting foster parent licenses. And they have lots of questions. They've worked a lot of times. Some of these caregivers have worked with their children for a really long time, trying to help their children and have known the children for a long time. And then they become the caregiver, and a lot of the issues change. And so a lot of the information in these books covers that kind of those challenges.
Okay. Well, Cheryl, thank you for calling in.
Okay.
And here's an email that came in from Paul who says, I and my older brother were raised from a young paternal grandparents. It was both a wonderful and stressful experience, Paul says. He says, as has been mentioned, there is a strange holding pattern that develops as my grandparents don't want to overstep their role as temporary guardians, as at the time we all thought this was a temporary situation and that brother and I would be returned to my father or mother at such a time they were able to financially support us. Paul says, little did we know that the underlying cause of the arrangement was one of mental health issues and custody and was never given back to our parents. He says, often this feels like a bit of purgatory for the children. The parents don't want or can't have you, while the grandparents don't want to overstep their roles and try to replace the role of your parents. Wow, Donna Butts, what do you think? That sounds tough, but maybe not untypical.
No, I don't think it's untypical. And Paul is really right, because what you can hear is that, that gratitude and the closeness with the grandparents, but yet that sort of feeling in limbo, which really isn't healthy for a child. They need that commitment and that sense that they've got a permanent home and roots. And that's one of the things that grandparents are so great at providing, is that sense of roots, that ability to keep brothers and sisters together and not separate them if they go into the system. And that sense of history. So it is very, very difficult. And what's important is for the grandparents to the degree possible, to really reinforce and support the child, that they're always going to be there. Because what we know is that a child can age out of a system, but they don't age out of a family. So whether they're going to go back with their parents or not, they'll always have their grandparents.
Marianne, what would you say to someone who was in this type of situation where they felt like they might have to take guardianship, custody, whatever you want to call it, of their grandkids, and they weren't sure? What would you say?
See, I would tell them to try it and do it. I was even asked right up front by my social worker, will you take these children? Because this is how critical my situation was. My situation was one where they almost knew that he was going to end up away from their parents. I would recommend to grandparents that have their grandchildren to make them feel that this is their home, and this is going to be your home, and we're not going to let anything happen to you. And you can't, you know, if it's possible and the children are safe, tell them you will be able to see your parents here. Or like with mine have never wanted to see their mother. Their father does have supervised visits twice a week. But, you know, allow them to see the parents, but let them know that nothing's going to happen to you. This is your home. This is where you're going to live until or if your parents are able to take you back. Again, it all stems on safety of the children. And I'll tell you, the state, I'm involved in several different aspects of making the system work better, and it has changed enormously and with children. And most kids want to see their parents, even if they've been harmed or been through alcohol or anything has happened to them. Deep down, they still want to see mom and dad. And this is why, even though both of my children's parents have lost parental rights, we've still allowed father in twice a week because he's our son. And we have actually made a point that every 6 weeks or so we take him to their great-grandmother, who is now 96, and we've done that ever since we've had them, because she loves these kids. They're her only grandkids. So
keeping those connections strong there, Marianne, is important. Yeah.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know, and
Lorraine,
you have to kind of act like a parent.
Yeah.
Instead of a grandparent, you're a parent.
Well, that's the tough part, though, isn't it? I mean, do you sometimes, Marianne, just want to be a grandparent, right? You want to, I don't know.
You lose your friends. You lose your friends. You lose your retirement. You lose your adult life. I'm a mom. I'm a mom who loves her family, who loves her children. And any grandparent out there that takes their grandkids must have that same love that I have for their family. They don't want strangers taking care of their kids. They want to be part of bringing them up. And I'm so proud of my two kids, because one is MR. He's going to require 24/7 the rest of his life, but he's pretty functional. And the other one, if you'd asked me 7 years ago that he would be where he is today, I would say, what are you kidding? He has made an unbelievable recovery from what he suffered. So grandparents do play an important role, and you just have to make them feel you're always going to be there for them. You're not going to let them down.
Well, Marianne, you've given up a lot, and they're lucky to have you.
Yeah, I have. But I love these kids and these boys in my life, and my husband's life. He's still with us, and you know, we try to do the best to raise them the best we can. They're involved in everything possible. I'm out 6 nights a week with these kids doing something.
Marianne, I'm going to cut you off there. Thank you so much for sharing your stories, and good luck with those boys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. That's Marian McDonald, legal guardian, as she told us, for two grandsons now, age 20 and 27. Donna Butts, it was great to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
Donna Butts, Executive Director of Generations United, based in D.C. And Lorraine Bartlett, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Lorraine Bartlett, Director of the New Hampshire Division for Children, Youth, and Families. This is The Exchange on NHPR.